from danger of sin, danger of averos, yitzhahara, in the same way that a person would run away from fire. The same fear that if you stay too long, the fire is going to take you in. And that's what Yosef HaTzadik did. And that answers the question why it is that Yosef HaTzadik left his clothing with the Eishes Potiphar. It doesn't make any sense, right? Well, why would he do that? Why would he leave incriminating evidence with her so that she can say, oh, look, he left his clothing by me? Why would he do that? He could have overpowered her. You know, Yosef HaTzadik was a young man, strong guy. He could have pulled it out of her hands. It's just he could not wait in that situation for even one more second. Almost to say he had to run out of it, even if it left him compromised, so to speak. But if he would have stayed for even one more second, then he wouldn't have been able to run away under normal circumstances. So the question is, where did Yosef get that strength from? That's going to ultimately bring us back to Lag BaOmer. So we know, Gemara says, Rashi quotes in Chumash, that what saved Yosef in the nick of time from falling into the Yitzhahara of Eishes Potiphar was that he was raw demus diukno shel aviv. He saw in the window Yaakov's image. So the Pashup Shad is, you know, he felt as if his father was there. He had such a connection with his father that even when his father wasn't actually present, but he felt that it was as if his father was watching. And he couldn't do an Avera while his father was watching. Very, very strong pshat in the Medrash. There's a Chassidish pshat, I think. Rav Judah Michel spoke to BNP a bunch of years ago. He said from the Ishbitzer, also a very powerful pshat, maybe it's not the Pashup Shad in the Medrash, but he says, seeing the image of Yaakov, of his father, it wasn't so much that it was Yaakov and he had this fear of doing something in front of Yaakov. It was that he saw the image of his father. He saw the image of a father. He pictured himself in his father's shoes, so to speak. What's going to be down the line? I'm going to be a father. I'm going to have children. Right? So I'm going to have the responsibility to be a role model. And I'm going to have to exemplify what it means to be a Jew, to be a fine, upstanding citizen, whatever you want to call it. And this is what I'm going to have in my past. This is the story I'm going to be able to share with my children of how I fell prey to the Yitzhahara and, you know, here in the shrine with the Yitzhahara. So he saw the image of himself almost as a father and knew that he had to respond by running away. So that's pshat number two. So another pshat over here, though, which perhaps Yaakov, at a different juncture in his life, set the stage for Yosef to be able to do what he needed to do. And that brings us to when he leaves the house of Laban. So what happens? Hashem comes to him in a dream, and basically Yaakov sees that it's time to go home, time to go back to Eretz Yisrael. Laban's been cheating him, and he's suffering under the watch of Laban. Time to pick up the mishpacha and go back. So what does he do in the middle of the night, when no one's watching? He escapes. And he was already a few days' travel from where Laban was, so he had a good head start. Ultimately, Laban catches up with him, but he had to run away. The question is, why did he run away? So look at the first paragraph. He ran away, all his wives and his children, all of his possessions. God tells you, okay, Yaakov, it's time to go home. So if God tells you it's time to go home, so then why do you need to escape under the cover of night? Hashem says, this is the time to go, so you leave. When Klal Yisrael leave Mitzrayim, broad daylight, right? So what was Yaakov afraid of? Yeshalom the Choma the Eshalamite Benes Loras L'Sham Shpenisim. So the Pashup Shad could be throughout the history of the Jewish people, Hashem tries to minimize open miracles, and we also try to minimize relying on open miracles. And maybe there would have been more danger if he left in broad daylight. Akam Akro Bricha Hayu Mochrach Lanei Shabal Kima Lavan Arami Bechom Alay Lavam L'Sham Lecha Pentit Abram Yaakov Mitovarav. But you know what? That's not going to answer the question here, because after all, when Lavan is about to catch up with Yaakov, what happens? Hashem comes to Lavan in a dream and says, you're going to meet Yaakov tomorrow, don't you dare touch him. And if you do, you're in big trouble. And Lavan even comes and recounts that story and says, you know, I would have killed you, or I would have kidnapped you or something, but Hashem told me last night to stay away. Right? So the fear of Lavan didn't dissipate. He was still going to need an ace. Hashem had to come to Lavan. He spoke to a guy in a dream and told him not to harm Yaakov. So he needed the Nisim anyway. So what was Yaakov accomplishing? He tried to avoid an Nisim. He didn't accomplish that. Bevala Yaakov hiskim l'rosh lovin yir d'vacharov l'chziro v'yitzach l'nisim. He knew from the get-go that Yaakov knew from the get-go that Lavan was going to chase after him, that he would need siyata d'shmaya to be saved. V'achasim bo lovin hadibur b'chorin shal yimnas Yaakov v'losh v'laros avosav moshav bo elav hadibur b'kil. So what difference did it make when Hashem spoke to Lavan? In the end of the day, Lavan had to be stopped. So he needed the Maisa Nisim. So what was Yaakov accomplishing by running away in the middle of the night? That's the shot. Next paragraph. Near the Chol Maisa Ava Simul Bana. We know the Klal. Maisa Ava Simul Bana. Also Zelopol Dimyoni Labana V'Acharav Shilam koch ze lebrach al kopon mitnei hakochos achisonim harod from achareim afil b'makom shi eshalom lamad b'kishim ucham. So Yaakov Avinu, like all the Avos, sometimes what directed their actions, even if maybe it wasn't the practical necessity for the matter at hand, they set the tone, they set the stage, they provided an example, a model for how their children would have to behave in circumstances that they would find in the future. And what Yaakov did over here was to run away from Lavan, even if that wasn't, again, intuitively the way to do it, but to send the message and to provide the strength for the Jewish people in the future to run away. That there are going to be some times where they just have to totally break away from the threat, even if ultimately they don't have sufficient power to win, to overcome the threat of Kishrei Mochama, of a war, whatever it might be. But sometimes the danger is such that even if it's not going to solve the problem by running away, you need to run away because of the danger itself. And by doing so, so he says, we understand how Klal Yisrael reacted in Mitzrayim. Okay, look at the next paragraph. Zeh ha'inyan ha'yanami Mitzrayim ki b'chi pazon yatsasu ki b'chi pazon yatsum eretz Mitzrayim. She Yisrael lo ha'yib od kochem yafal achnias kochem Mitzrayim. The Jews could not, at that point, subdue the kochos of Mitzrayim. Huch glatz b'chi pazon ke'in bricha. So they had to run away as if there was this escape that needed to be made immediately at that juncture. That's how the pasuk describes it. The pasuk in Yeshaya, which is foretelling times of Mashiach when there'll be ultimately the geula, there it's specifically described as the opposite. Klal Yisrael is not going to have to run away in order to be redeemed with chipazon. Because the point in time at which Mashiach is ready to come will be fortified spiritually, that our salvation is not going to come from escaping the threat. It'll be just a power within us to vanquish the threat. But Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim weren't at that point yet. So even though Klal Yisrael needed Nisim anyway to save themselves from Mitzrayim, but they needed to act in response to the matter at hand, the fact that they couldn't overcome the Mitzrayim to run away and provide that distance between where they were and Mitzrayim to provide that distance so that wherever they escaped to, they would be disconnected from Mitzrayim. So similarly, Yosef perhaps took that same example from Yaakov and the method of responding to a threat, instead of staying and fighting, like we said from the bottom of Musar before, instead of Yaakov staying and antagonizing Lavan in a way which would have required HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give him super strength and to provide Nisim in order to be Matzliach, so to Yosef said, I'm not going to stick around and hope HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give me the ability to overcome the Yetzirah. I got to run away. What does that have to do with Lavan? So there's a similar parallel to what we said before about Yetzias Mitzrayim followed by Kriyas Yamsuf, found in the next part of the story after Yaakov runs away from Lavan. So he travels for a little while, and they meet up with each other, and Lavan goes on a whole tirade. And Yaakov also goes on a tirade, getting him back for all those years of disrespect and mistreating them and stealing all his money and changing the terms. And finally, they make up. They have a truce, right? That truce is represented by a matseva that they set up with the stones that are nearby the area that they're camped. Anyone know what that place is called ultimately? Torah says that they named the place after the treaty that's made, and that's the name that exists to this day. Now, what was that? Not Beer Sheva. It's interesting. The name, there's actually two names that are given in that parsha, one in Aramaic and one in Hebrew. Yaakov gives it a name, and Lavan gives it a name. Lavan calls it Yegar Sahadusa, and Yaakov calls it Gal Eid. Okay? End of Parshas Vayetze. So it says over there, what is Gal Eid? What's a Gal? What's that? It could be in a wave, but also a Gal Shalavan means like a mound of stones. Okay? So that's really what it was. Gal Eid means a mound of stones that are an aid, that are a testimony, witness to the fact that you and I created some sort of agreement whereby I won't harm you, you won't harm me, our children won't harm each other, and so on. Gal Eid, Svarim say, is the same letter as Gal, is the lesson of Lag, Lag Ba'Omer. Lag Ba'Omer somehow connects to Gal Eid. What's the remez there? What's the remez in Gal Eid? We're talking about Yaakov running away from love and no shaykhs. So you see over there, at that point that they made the treaty, the Pasuk says that we have an understanding that we will not cross over this line to harm each other. And that's why you fast forward to Bilam, Parshas Balak, what happens? He's traveling on his donkey, and the donkey presses him against a stone wall. That's exactly what the Pasuk says. And the donkey refuses to go any further. And the Medrash says, why suddenly they get to a stone wall, and that's when the donkey decides to crouch down? It's true, there's a mouth there standing in his way with a sword. But Chazal tell us that that stone wall was the wall, the pile of stones that Yaakov and Laban had set up to sort of be the line in the sand, that we're not going to cross over to harm each other. Just like Klal Yisrael had to escape from Mitzrayim, just get away from the threat, even though the threat had not been vanquished yet. But that's what they needed to do at that moment. Yitzias Mitzrayim, the first half of Pesach, the second half of Pesach was where HaKadosh Baruch Hu drowned the Mitzrayim in Mitzrayim. And the line in the sand was drawn. Where it's not simply that we're running away from the threat, but the threat no longer exists. Because the threat's over there, at the bottom of the sea, and we're going forward into the desert towards Har Sinai. Likewise, when Yaakov ran away from Lavan in the middle of the night, that was Ki'ilu Yitzias Mitzrayim, to put everything behind him, even though the threat still existed. When they got to Gal Eid, when they got to that point of no return, then there was no longer a threat. It wasn't just escaping from it, but creating a solid boundary whereby the evil of Lavan, the spiritual threat of Arami Ovid Avi, would no longer be effective, and Yaakov can continue on his way protected and entirely focused on the growth and not just weeding out the danger that faced him before. So you see this parallel. There's Yitzias Mitzrayim, and then there's Kriyas Yamsuf. There's tracing back the Yitzhiyah from the house of Lavan to Gal Eid, the Lag Ba'Omer. Lag Ba'Omer represented some transition that the Gal Eid represented, which totally divorced Yaakov from Lavan, even more significantly, it seems, than the drowning of the Mitzrayim in Mitzrayim. How so? So listen to this cheshbon, very interesting. It's not the Shem Rishmo made the first cheshbon. Yesterday was it's Tesvav Ir. What's Tesvav Ir? Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni is a few days before Lag BaOmer, right? So Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday is Lag BaOmer. You can shave on Friday and cover Shabbos, but it falls out on Sunday. But Lag BaOmer is actually on Sunday. So there's 3 days in between. If you remember remember back to the first semester, so we learned the Gemara in Kedushin Daf Lamed Ches, talks about the fact that the Jewish people ate the man for a 40-day period, right? 40-year period. The Gemara asks, what do you mean it wasn't really 40 years? Because the last 30 days, what's that? Right, so after Moshe Rabbeinu died, they weren't eating the man anymore. Right? So the Gemara says, what do they do? So they had some man that was left over from before, right? But but that kept going until when? Tezayin Nisan. So they got to Eretz Yisrael, right? They ran out of food that they had from before, and then on the Seder night, right? That was the whole Shiloh, the Tosfos on the top. If they still had food that they were carrying with them, or they had to rely on Aseidah Cholosase to make matzah with the Chadosh that they found in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so they carry it with them for another 30 days till Pesach time. However, the Gemara wants to know that's still not 40 complete years, because did the Jews start eating man immediately when they left Mitzrayim, the first Pesach? No. When did the man start falling? So according to his cheshbon over here, it started falling on Pesach Sheni, 1 month after the original Pesach, right? So it means it was 30 days short, because they stopped eating the man, on Pesach entering Eretz Yisrael, 4 years before. They were still missing 30 days because they didn't start eating the man until Pesach Sheni. So what does Gemara say? Gemara says that the matzahs that they baked in Mitzrayim as they were running out had the taste of the man in it. And that was the food that they ate for the first month until they ran out of all the food, and then Hashem had to send the man. Yeah? So it means that they were eating the same food. The man lasted the first 30 days into the midbar till the man began to fall. But it was different man. It was different man. Where was the source of that man? So the man was still Mitzrayim. The source of the man still had the trappings and the influence and the hashpah and the contributions of the forces of Chutz La'aretz, of Mitzrayim, of the Shibur and the Avodah Zarah, everything that the society was steeped in. It was lacking a certain pristine purity that the Jews had with the man that fell from Shemayim, directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that impacted them not only on a physical level in their sustenance, but on a spiritual level as well. You can imagine. Food that God sends down to you from Shemayim is qualitatively different than food that you bake in your own kitchen that you harvest from the grain that was taken from Mitzrayim. As I'll say the Gemara says in Yuma that the man is called Lechem Abirim. It's the bread that Abirim, the high ones, the Malachi Asharis eat. What does that mean? Malachi Asharis eat food? They don't eat food. They're supernatural beings. But there's some sort of spiritual forces that come from that sustenance that the Jews were able to intake when they ate the man. So for the first 30 days, what happened? They were eating the man, which was still not 100% pure. It still had these metaphysical properties, but it was still coming from the tomb of Mitzrayim. So Iyar, 15th of Iyar, is when that stopped, when the real man from Shemayim started to come down. And how many days were they eating the new man before Lag BaOmer? 1, 2, 3. Right? The 16th, the 17th, the 18th, when Lag BaOmer falls out, right? Based on our cheshbon. This year, Thursday till Sunday, it was a 3-day process by which they were introducing the new food that got the old food out of the system and introduced now the after Pesach Sheni, the man that had fallen. So in other words, we're also, well, this is, I'm not holding. Someone told me recently they're doing a juice cleanse. Yeah? I don't even know what that means. So I went home and I had to Google it. Okay? Basically, like, you don't eat anything for like a week. You just drink juice all day. Okay? And I guess that works. I'm not sure exactly what it does. But whatever your cleanse is, the idea is you got to flush the system. When there's a remnants of some sort of impurity, whether it be dietary impurity or otherwise, you gotta just flush out the whole system in order to start fresh. And then I can start my diet from scratch, and I'm on my way. So the transition between Pesach Sheni and Lag BaOmer was a cleanse by which they stopped eating the man from Mitzrayim, and they were now being sustained on the man that was coming from Shemayim. And those 3 days, the Chazakah, that made it for real. That sort of clinched the difference between the old man and the new man. So Lag BaOmer Be'etzem Rabosai is the beginning of Klal Yisrael, not just watching Mitzrayim trailing behind, not just watching them drown on one level, cutting off the evil that was previously threatening them, but now Lag BaOmer, the Gal Eid, was drawing the line in the sand that it's not just you're not chasing after me anymore because you're dead, but I've even uprooted the Mitzrayim that was inside of me, flushed out the system, and I can be fully sustained by the lechem that comes from Shemayim in that preparation for Har Sinai. So Lag BaOmer is a cutoff point where you say that there's nothing left inside of me from that original diet, and I have a koach to be purified and to only drink up the pristine sustenance from the source, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu itself. L'maiser Bosei. L'maiser, what is the practical takeaway from here? To express in one specific way. There's many ways to take it. But hear this out, a line from Chofetz Chabad on the second side, and understand that if you take it only at face value, it's easily written off as something like, I'm not on this level, it's not me. But if you apply it on a personal level, so you'll see the application is pretty simple. It's pretty simple. The Chofetz Chabad, towards the end of the Sefer, introduces the Shar Avas Hashem. How does a person reach the love of God? Sounds like something which, you know, I can't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hard to appreciate a relationship with someone who I can't directly communicate with or come in contact with in a way which is palpable. So how does one achieve Avas Hashem? So he says, basically, maybe it's hard to imagine at this point, but if you do all the prerequisites to get there, then you'll know it when you see it. You'll be able to appreciate it once you've achieved the intermediary steps. And as a side note, but it's one that always stuck with me, he says, why did I put this Shar of Avas Hashem where I put it? I introduce it after the Shar of Precious. What does Precious mean? Precious, lefrosh.
Separate.
So the term precious in Musar is the notion of distancing oneself from the tanugum, from the pleasures of Olam Hazeh. Okay, which as soon as you hear that sounds like something which is reserved for tzaddikim. So he says very simply. Look in the bottom half of that page. Lev Tov, Mikavan. So skip down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down. 6 lines down. Madriga Krova Biosha Madriga Avos Elokim. Shara Rishon Shel Shareh V'Eshel Adam Lagil Avos Hashem. L'chein Hegdamu. Sorry, the first words on the line. L'chein Hegdamu. The reason why the order of the sefer is as it is. L'chein Hegdamu is the Shara Precious L'Shara Avos Hashem. Why did the Shara on Precious have to precede the Shara on Avos Hashem? The Yishemina Nimna Shetimotze Avos Hashem B'libenu. It's impossible for a person to achieve Avos Hashem, to have it in his heart. Kol Och Nimtzeis Banu Ava L'Nyanei Olam Hazeh. So long as a person has a love for this world, for the materialism, it's just not going to go. It's sort of like a cup with water, okay? It's filled to the brim. And you have a stone, and someone tells you to put the stone in the water. So putting the stone in the water, by definition, is going to push some of the water out. You can't fit both in the same space because they preclude simultaneous existence in the same location. So the same thing is true when it comes to a person's love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu versus his love of this world. You gotta make a choice. Sometimes you have to make a decision that there's certain sacrifices I'm going to have to make, but it makes me into a more spiritual person. And when I have trouble attaching myself to spirituality, sometimes I need to say to myself, maybe it's because I'm a little too connected to the materialism that the world around us bombards us with. So the Lag BaOmer is Klal Yisrael making that disconnect and cleansing themselves of the materialistic connection of even the man, that even the spiritual existence, the spiritual sustenance, magical powers of the matzah that they baked on the very first Pesach that tasted like the man, even that had impurities of gashmias that had to be flushed out. Lag BaOmer, they started a new path, charted a new goal towards Matan Torah that was entirely spiritual. And when you leave the confines of yeshiva, and especially because the next 2 weeks are 1,000% focused only on passing tests and getting through your courses, and unless you're really trying hard, which I'm on your team, we'll make it happen, siyat d'shmaya, you have to try really hard to be machnas, the learning and the tefillah on a serious level during the next couple of weeks. And for sure, once you finish your finals and you're out in the open world without the structure of yeshiva on a daily basis and minyanim, whenever you need one, 3 times a day, and shir, etc., it's so easy to get lost in everything else that fills the blood vessels, everything else that fills the system, and you don't even have a chance to flush it out until Elul. And even then it's an avodah, because then you're coming back and trying to get your feet wet in school and your new courses and everything. Like, it's just the never-ending snowball effect. And it makes it difficult. It makes it very difficult. The bracha that I wish for everybody, but the avoda also simultaneously that you have to keep in the back of your head for the end of this year, moving into the summer, and for all of life, leaving yeshiva, is an appreciation that on whatever level a person finds themselves, the degree to which the gashmis takes over, and the degree to which a person's system is filled with the mon of Mitzrayim and not the mon of the midbar that began to fall, that was on Pesach Sheni and was rooted in on the third time the Chazakah on Lag BaOmer. So there's always going to be that challenge. And the more that you're feeding yourself the ruchnistic sustenance and nutrition through Torah and through Tefillah and through davening with a minyan and through chesed and through concentrated cognizance of my Avodas Hashem, so everything else becomes much easier. And I have to make sure we don't get lost in everything we're swept up. Or I should say everything that everyone else around us often gets swept up with, about the drive for the money, for the doggy dog world and the rat race. You lose sight of what you're really here for. Please don't forget that. And please try to take those lessons, which, especially that theme, is something that comes up again and again in Shir. You know, it's close to my heart. Please take it with you. Mr. Shem, you leave yeshiva. I'm always here for you. Rabbi Huda is always here for you. Please be in touch with us in any way that you want, whatever's easiest. And a lot of guys will be around for the summer. Amran also. I look forward to being able to continue learning. I'll try to send out some things on the WhatsApp group every once in a while, Mirtz Hashem. But stay connected, and B'siyat Shemaya, the next year should start on the right foot after a wonderful summer that propels Ruchnis and not takes in the opposite direction, Chas V'Shalom. As we're waiting for Yechiel, let's come back with...